And now, Bax's View from the Couch, brought to you by Rocky's Ace Hardware, Outdoor Power Headquarters, Steel, Ego, and Craftsman, Rocky's Outdoor Power Trifecta.
Hey, good morning, sports fans. How the heck are you, folks? I can think of very few things in life more depressing and horrible than living your life as a diehard fan of the Atlanta Falcons. Yes, there is disease in the world, there is poverty, there are people starving in third world countries, and yet none of those people have to suffer watching the Atlanta Falcons play football this season. In fact, I consider those people to be the lucky ones. Because you see, not only are the Atlanta Falcons in a three-way tie with the Giants and Jets for the worst record of the NFL, still winless after 5 weeks, they've also been forced to shut down their seemingly underutilized training facility yesterday morning after a member of the Falcons organization tested positive for the COVIDs. According to reports, following an overabundance of caution, the Falcons have closed their facilities after a team staff member tested positive for the virus. The person who contracted the virus has not been identified. However, it has been confirmed that it was not an active player of the Falcons roster, because after five dreadful games a season, it has become abundantly clear that the Falcons offense hasn't been able to catch anything. However, there are other reports that say the Falcons have had multiple positive tests, but none of them have been confirmed as of yet. Now, the Falcons are scheduled to play the Minnesota Vikings on Sunday, and as of right now, that has not changed. But we all know how that sort of thing works. 1 minute you're slated to play on a Sunday afternoon, the next thing you're being moved to Monday afternoon or Tuesday night or to a bye week or some other idiotic manipulation to the schedule, which ultimately affects nearly a third of everybody else's NFL schedule. Look, these sort of things are going to keep happening. Teams will continue to test positive, just like it's assured that the Falcons will continue to lose football games. It's unfortunate. It's inconvenient. But it also happens to be a fact. And right now, the NFL is scrambling to figure out what to do next. In other words, it's only going to get worse. And I'm not even talking about the coronavirus. But hey, enough of my yapping. Sports brought to you by Rocky's Ace Hardware. Everything you read online about Benjamin Moore paint proves that Benjamin Moore is the paint that painting professionals prefer. It's also the paint for your do-it-yourselfers like yourself who want to paint something around the house with good quality products. Rocky's has got good people in the paint department, plus Benjamin Moore at every Rocky's Ace Hardware. I'm Bax. That's my view from the couch.
Rock 102.
It's 7:09 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102.
It's 64 degrees right now, but later today it will be a lot chillier than that as temperatures will drop when it begins to rain in about an hour.
After 8 o'clock this morning, we're talking to Ray Berry from White Lion Brewing. They are about to open up everything at their location at Tower Square where the old Spaghetti Freddy's used to be. So we'll be talking to Ray after 8 o'clock about what's being planned and what's being done, and they are already brewing beer as we speak.
Damn, talk about things that used to be here. Spaghetti Freddy's. How about, remember Spaghetti Warehouse?
I do.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, the very week I got this job, we went out to dinner with a bunch of your friends at Spaghetti Freddy's.
Yes.
At that
and
place.
That's when they shut it down.
For that very reason, they said,
exactly.
Get out.
Yeah, I believe it was the next morning they said, that's never going to happen again. Speaking of places shutting down, and it's not shutting down, but I remember earlier this week we talked about this, and I was really kind of amazed by it. Obviously, COVID is changing a lot of things, and a lot of things are going to be probably permanently changed even after COVID is gone. And one of the things they were talking about in particular of the casinos is that Encore Boston is going to be closed from, I believe I said, Monday or late Sunday night until Thursday afternoon. I think that's what I had said.
Yeah.
I'm going off memory here. There was a big report released over the weekend about MGM, and I realize it's Friday, but this is actually it might have been released earlier this week. One notable finding was how few of MGM's visitors were from the eastern part of the state, given that this survey was done before Encore Boston had opened. It doesn't surprise me. I would say most of the people from the Boston area were going to Connecticut.
Yeah, and now that Encore is open, most of the people in the Boston area are going to go there.
Yeah. But to say before Encore even opened that there were very few people from the eastern portion of Massachusetts. Also surprising how big of a share of the spending at MGM Springfield and in Springfield was redirected from out of state, either because gamblers had been lured here from outside of Massachusetts or because Massachusetts gamblers would have wagered at the Connecticut casinos. So at least MGM was redirecting a lot of that revenue back, into the city.
So I'm not sure I'm following what you're saying.
Yeah,
so,
I confused myself a little bit by the way I read it. It was surprising how big a share of the spending at MGM Springfield and in Springfield, in other words, into the community, was redirected from out of state, either because gamblers were lured here from Connecticut or because mass gamblers would have wagered at Connecticut casinos.
Okay. All right. I guess I kind of understand that.
Yeah, I don't think so. Because I don't think I do, and I'm the one reading it.
Well, I mean,
it's a little confusing.
See, I mean, the problem that I think MGM has is, and I said that we said this even before it opened, that if you were going to go and compare this to either Foxwoods or Mohegan, you're going to be disappointed. Not because it's not great, but because by its very scale, it can't compete with those two. If they had somehow built something as elaborate as either Mohegan or Foxwoods, well, then you might have a different situation. But there was no way that was going to happen. This is still better than most of the casinos, apart from Connecticut or Las Vegas and maybe even Atlantic City. Other areas of the country that have casinos don't have anything close to what MGM is. But I think we've become so accustomed to seeing what they have in Connecticut that you look at an MGM and say, well, that's all we got out of $1 billion. I think that's wrong. I think that's a really bad way of looking at it.
The demographic makeup of patrons.
You don't think so?
No, I do. I was just trying to get as much of this, and now I've lost it all. I was trying to get as much of this in as I could, and now the whole thing has disappeared. Oh, here it is. Okay. The demographic makeup of patrons mirrored by the state's population, they were more likely to be Hispanic and less likely to be white or Asian. That surprises me a little bit. And they tended to be older as well, with a higher proportion in the 35 to 64 age range. That doesn't surprise me at all.
Right. I mean,
older people are into gambling, but the Hispanic thing, that surprises me.
Well, I mean, if you look at the population of Springfield, particularly downtown, it shouldn't really be much of a surprise.
Well, but you wouldn't think that the population of downtown Springfield makes up the majority of gamblers at MGM.
Yeah, but how much are we talking about, though? I mean, if you're talking about a certain population with a limited, economic opportunity,
Hispanics,
which may be, but you know, how much are they really spending? I mean, proportionally speaking, they may spend as much as they can, but is it necessarily as much as you would find proportionally in some other place? I don't know.
How much are they spending? MGM Springfield supported $356.9 million in new personal income and $974 million in new output within the Massachusetts economy in its first year of operation. There was an average of 2,538 jobs at MGM Springfield in 2019 that paid $85.2 million. But remember, MGM opened up promising, before MGM opened up, they promised there would be 3,000 jobs. They never hit that mark. Of course, they also promised projections of revenues that never hit the mark either. But outside the casino, the visitors created 3,740 jobs on net. Outside the casino, the other area businesses created 3,740 jobs. That's not bad.
That's actually really good.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at how, across the street, they put a CVS. So there's a couple of employees. You had to hire more people at Red Rose because that place doubled in size with a second kitchen as a result of MGM moving in their backyard. I mean, yeah, there has been growth in Springfield.
Not as much as they had hoped.
No, but again, though, from the very beginning, and we talked about this before, when you put projections out for a business that has not yet opened its doors, you know, that's really meant for other purposes, you know, investment, you know, into that property. Realistically, I mean, I don't think anyone could have said, oh, yeah, no, they're definitely going to hit those numbers. Whether it's, you know, a matter of the people coming in or revenue, I don't think it was realistic from the beginning to say, oh, yeah, no, these are completely attainable goals.
Well, but yet they were based on some kind of a formula.
Sure.
I mean, I can't remember this far back. But, we're talking over 25 years now before Foxwoods or Mohegan was open. But Foxwoods especially had projections. And when they were the very first one in New England, or in the Northeast, rather, they probably outdid their projections. So then you wonder, how did every subsequent casino after that, whether it was Mohegan or MGM or Rhode Island.
But remember, though, I mean, that's a casino built on sovereign land. They don't, you know, their whole business model is different because they don't have to have, you know, public works done in the same way you would do in a downtown casino.
I don't even remember if they had to have projections.
They probably didn't. I mean, I don't think anybody expected at the time that they would expand to the degree they did. I mean, they've had several expansions since they opened.
Foxwoods.
Well, both of them, really.
I was going to say, Foxwoods by itself had all these expansions. Never mind that Mohegan also came along and said, yeah, we're going to build right over here, about 5 miles away.
No. I mean, you don't kid yourself. They may not hit the projections, but they're still making money. COVID has you know, obviously given them a big, swift kick in the junk. But prior to that, they're still profitable. Still a profitable business.
MGM. Yeah, but boy, I got to tell you, I don't know if Encore is willing to say we're going to be closed from Sunday night until Thursday afternoon. I got to believe that MGM is going to follow in some kind of footsteps.
Maybe,
that
but what's
going to cut back from some kind of 24/7 operation.
Maybe, but Encore has a different set of operating costs that MGM doesn't. I mean, just based on its size and the amount of people that go in there and the amount of people that work there, you know, even before this change of the hours, I mean, their operating costs are very, very different than what they would see in Springfield.
Well, sure, but it's all relative. I mean, their operating costs based on their revenues is one thing, but it's the same thing for MGM. MGM's operating costs are much lower than Encore's, but so is their revenue. So, you know, it's proportional. It could very well be that MGM, I was always surprised that MGM was going to be a 24/7 operation to begin with. I mean, I've never been in there on a Wednesday morning at 4 a.m. And believe me, I wanted to many times on my way into work stop and play a few hands of blackjack in the very beginning, in the first few weeks.
Yeah, but since you can't find a clock in that place, you might be late to work every day.
Yeah, I'd have to keep my phone out. But I am kind of curious as to what that place, before the COVID, what that place must have looked like on a Wednesday morning at 4.
It probably looks like it does on a Friday night at 7 right now.
Well, right now, yeah. Yeah. Well, without all the plexiglass. I still can't believe how much you see these, you know, they show this video, and it's the same piece of video, which I think was probably shot in the days that they reopened. But when you see all this, I haven't been in there, obviously, but when you see all of that plexiglass, it's like, first of all, I wish I had the plexiglass contract. And then secondly, it's just, you know, everybody is cordoned off from everybody else. That's the way I believe life should be.
In soundproof plexiglass cubicles.
Not necessarily soundproof, but certainly sound diminishing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You walk around wearing them.
Sound resistant. Everybody should have that cone of silence we talked about yesterday.
Or that elevator thing that the Jetsons had.
Yes.
Where it came up out of the floor and it just wrapped itself around you.
I
like to have that when I leave my house.
We all travel by bank tube.
Yeah, that would be great.
It's 7:21 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102.
The Patriots intend to
112 for complete offer details.
It's 7:24 with Bax and O'Brien at Rock 102. Sunday night here on Rock 102. Make sure you check out Baxy's Musical Fun Bag. I'll have music from The Clash, The Talking Heads, New Order, Buzzcocks, and brand new stuff from The Damned. That's this Sunday night, 9 o'clock, right here on Rock 102.
Buzzcocks, huh?
Yep.
You're not teasing us about that.
No, I would not.
I would not be a Buzzcock tease.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
All right. You know, I love not only that they listen to us, but that they respond to us as well. So earlier this morning, we're talking about the fire on Bondi's Island, and I was saying how Hector Molina was doing a live shot from out there, and that he said that fire crews were here from as far away as Carew, Massachusetts. And I thought, well, that must be far away because there is no Carew, Massachusetts. So apparently they were listening because I've been notified by text that he in fact meant Peru. Now, there is a Peru, Massachusetts,
okay,
out in the Berkshires, and for the life of me, I could not imagine what they have in Peru, Massachusetts, that West Springfield, Springfield, and Agawam fire departments don't have.
They got more buckets.
I don't know about that. That I can see a mutual aid call going out from Bondi's Island to Peru to drive out. I don't think most fire trucks even have highway miles on them. You know, the Peru fire truck would have to come down the Mass Pike.
Right.
Probably all the way from Lee. Hey, we're here. Oh, thank God you guys from Peru are here. Boy, we thought we'd never get this fire out if it wasn't for you.
Finally, we can tackle this blaze thanks to one firefighter from Peru who was on duty.
And his truck.
So, is this an inside source for 22 News or for the fire department?
No, it's an inside source for 22 News.
I see.
In fact, Hector wanted to get a hold of me to let me know that he either thinks I misheard him or he's not certain whether he misspoke. He misspoke. I heard him clearly because I thought he meant Carew Street.
Well, you know,
would have made more sense.
You know, damnedest thing because Hector and I are Facebook friends.
Oh,
he could very easily have gone on Facebook on his phone, where I'm sure he wrote down accidentally the word Carew, and then he could have corrected us.
Yeah,
I don't know why he didn't do that. Hector, you are always welcome to message me at any point.
But, you know, when you're generally when you're waiting for the firefighters to arrive, you're on edge. Minutes feel like hours. But when they're coming from Peru, hours probably feel like days.
See, I think there's probably more people in this area would think they're coming from the South American country of Peru.
They probably would have gotten here faster.
They probably have a hell of a lot more equipment. It's 7:27. News is next to Rock 102.
Hazen Paper is known for producing the
Paloma Drive in Enfield.
7:30 with Bax and O'Brien to Rock 102. It's time for news, and it is brought to you by Noonan Energy, serving Western Massachusetts for over 125 years. NoonanEnergy.com. Here's local radio icon and first responder Steve Nagel.
Benvenidos, Quarantinos.
Muchos gracias, Premier Respondedor.
Si, senor.
Residents living above a South Boston pizza joint received a rude awakening early this morning. A car crashed into Magoo's Pizzeria.
Rude hug! Pizza hug!
At 479 West Broadway Street, leaving the driver injured and six residents displaced. That's the only reason why I wanted
to. That's the only reason. I figured that.
And we'll move on to
our own fire burning.
Oh, yeah. A fire at Bondi's Island, which has blanketed the region with thick smoke and ash, may burn into the weekend. Don't breathe the ash in.
Yes, try not to breathe in or breathe out, actually, any ash.
Mm-mm.
So Hector Molina did an update at 7:30, and he pointed out this time he did, in fact, say Peru, but he said firefighters from Peru and Egremont were called in.
Egremont.
Yeah, that's also way out there in the Berkshires, and I don't know.
I know a firefighter is writing me now who was there at the fire last night, and due to lack of the water from hydrants on the scene, they would call the tanker task force from the Berkshires. So that's why Peru was there.
Okay, because I was just in the process of texting, actually apparently waking a fire official who's still sleeping in at 7:30, but probably was out there until late last night.
Now, when the Peru Fire Department, and again, it's a town of less than 850 people.
Mm-hmm. But it's a whole bunch of property that's hard to reach.
Yes, yes. But when they are helping through mutual aid, another community with a fire, what happens if something in the small little town of Peru were to burn?
Well, the people, the firefighters from the next closest small little town would come. That's what mutual aid is. Nobody leaves anything uncovered. So whoever's next to Peru, they would come in and cover Peru while Peru is out.
Well, who's covering that town?
It's just a long line.
Bennington, Vermont, probably.
No, probably Great Barrington or Pittsfield or one of the bigger cities that can handle mutual aid.
Yeah, they're never gonna leave somebody uncovered.
No, not out in those towns. But not anywhere, actually, for that matter.
You know, every once in a while, you get that there could be five or six fires burning at multiple locations around any given city. So you need those people to come down and help.
I know. I'm just making sure that everything is all set, that no one is going to be understaffed or something. God forbid, should go wrong in any of these little country bumpkin towns.
This fire broke out about 1 p.m. Thursday in the landfill area of Bondi's Island. There are piles of brush and compost and trash at the landfill. Officials said that it is the brush portion that is burning. There is a significant fire in the landfill at Bondi's Island. Several fire department crews were on the scene and working to extinguish it. Heavy smoke is in the area and still is in the area this morning and being blown out further due to windy conditions.
And it's funky smelling, too, right? It's a funky smelling burn?
Well, it's...
It smells like wood.
It's more like that wet, mulchy smell. It's a nasty smell.
I came back through West Springfield, I don't know, probably about 4:30 or so. And as we were coming down Route 5 south from, Holyoke, you could just see all the smoke. And then, trying to figure out where it was coming from, and I just wasn't figuring that it was Bondi's Island. I thought it was some kind of a structure fire along Memorial Avenue, or, for God's sakes, the Big E. But then, you realize, oh, no, that's Bondi's.
Bondi's. Mm-hmm. Bondi's Island trash fire.
Yep. Which is in Agawam. Again, we talked about that earlier this morning, too. It's owned by Springfield. But it's actually in the town of Agawam. I always thought that was in the town of West Springfield.
Mm-mm. Nope. It's Agawam's. It's Agawam's problem.
I'm also being told by a trash man that the possibility of that fire starting, because that's where they dump all the ash from the burn plant, in that pit. Mm. So it could have accidentally started from that.
Sure.
But that's not factual information. That's just speculation at this
point. From where? Dump what from where?
So they take the ash from the burn plant.
What burn plant?
There's a burn plant on the site there. They burn some of the trash there.
Oh.
And then they take the ash and then they bring it over and bury it.
Huh.
Now you say a trash man. Are you talking about one individual or a bunch of trash men?
Well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird is a word. Bird is a word.
I'm just asking. Totally out of curiosity.
Quite a stretch.
No, I was thinking of the garbage man from the Simpsons lyrics. Who can take your trash out? Take it out for you. Who can pick it up and do the twisty dingy do? The garbage man. You don't remember that, where they had all the whole town's people? They got them new uniforms, and it was like they were offering extra trash service throughout the city of Springfield?
Yeah.
I mean, Steve mentioned the trash man. I don't think it's that much of a stretch. I mean,
a little bit of a stretch.
Not really. I mean,
A man lost control of his car as he was pulling into Nick's Nest and slammed into the building in Holyoke, forcing the restaurant to close early. The crash occurred about 5:15 p.m. on Thursday. Police were at the scene of the iconic restaurant on Northampton Street. According to Holyoke Police, Lieutenant Jim Albert.
Do we know whether this was another... I'm an old man. I confused my brake with my gas.
The gas and the brake, I don't know what happened.
Or was he already parked there, and then when he went to pull away, he accidentally put it in drive instead of reverse?
The picture doesn't show the kind of damage that indicated that he was driving at some higher rate of speed down Northampton Street.
Huh? On 22?
It was on Mass Live.
Yeah.
They showed the picture there. That. But
yeah,
it does look like some sort of either medical issue or the gas
or
pedal
some kind of
thing.
Hot dog issue. You know, you decide you're going to drive away and eat your hot dog at the same time, and all of a sudden a big glob of mustard falls off and lands on your lap, and you're like, oh my God.
Or maybe you're driving down the street, you're hungry as all hell, and you're looking for a place. You've never been to Holyoke. You're driving through, and then you're like, whoa, hot dogs! And then you wrap the wheel to the left, and you go right into the building by accident.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm curious as to whether he went into the front, the route side, the Route 5 side of the building, or the south side of the building, which is on one of those side streets. By the way, this is a full house, isn't it? I think somebody lives upstairs. I don't know if it's Nick's family.
I don't think Aunt Becky and Uncle Joey live in the house.
Why not?
You said the full house.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you're thinking like the John Stamos full house, Bob said.
I would love to live in a place like that.
I think we've all been in situations where you go to Nick's Nest and you're so excited to go, but you can't get there fast enough. But you try to have some control over the vehicle as you pull in.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Again, assuming he was pulling in.
Right. Now, you're talking about the excitement of living above an establishment like that?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I lived above a bar once. That was good. That was very convenient.
Yeah, that's very convenient, but not for a person who, over the age of 30, would enjoy.
Yeah, especially with the noise.
Well, I wasn't over the age of 30. I was much younger than that, but nevertheless, I never had a drunk driving problem as a result of that.
You only had to walk down the stairs.
And walk back up them. That was it.
But that would probably be your last stop of the evening, right?
Not always.
Would be the evening.
That's the whole night.
Yeah, but I mean, you're young, you're in college, you're like, hey, you know what, let's go hit all these bars in the area, and finally have one nightcap here at the, what was the name of the place?
It was called Club Garibaldi.
You're a crazy-ass drunk, Steve.
You're just realizing this now?
Listen.
If I got a bar downstairs, that's my one and only stop.
There's no reason to go anyplace else.
Yeah.
So, and there was like a great pizza place like right down the street from it. So you could like order a pizza at the bar, and there you have the whole night's right there. And your landlord is the bartender. And as long as you're paying the rent on time, you know, because you have a business relationship.
Your landlord's the bartender?
Yes.
Oh.
So even better, you know, we had a good, healthy, friendly relationship. I was sometimes getting a few drinks for free as the night went on. You know, the longer you spend sitting at the bar, the more like a piece of furniture you become.
Was it free, or was it just built into the price of the rent? Like, did he probably say, you know, how much was the rent?
Oh God, I don't even remember. It wasn't a lot.
If it ended with a $10, you know, it's like the rent $310 a month. You know, $10 is for gratuity.
We were splitting it between three people, so I think it was like an even $100 increment.
Okay, so it's $375, and each one of you gets $25 towards your bar tab and tip. I think that's a great way to run a business and a rental property.
Listen, I don't care how he managed it. That's not my issue. My issue is I was treated well in a great little place, and I kind of miss those kind of opportunities.
Yeah,
living above a bar.
I would love that, but again, I'm not gonna. It's not gonna be my last stop. It's gonna be my only stop.
We should make a bar in your basement, John.
Why?
Since you can't go out, you really can't go out anywhere.
I don't want anybody in either.
Now that the outdoor places are going to be closing for the winter.
Yeah, but I don't want I don't want people here.
No, you don't have to have people here. You can just set up a little bar by yourself.
Yeah, they got cardboard
chair. They got a fridge.
They got cardboard cutouts at sporting events. You can pretend that's the bartender.
I don't understand why I need to go to the basement. I can put a chair in front of the fridge.
I'm just talking about getting that atmosphere of being out. I know you enjoy going out from time to time.
Yeah, you can't fake that indoors.
It would be where everybody knows your name.
Yeah, you can put up a little sign, one of them cute little neon signs that says John's Bar.
Johnny's Place.
Johnny's Place.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I can't even. I thought about possibly buying one of those deck heaters, but you know, a really good one costs a couple hundred dollars.
You can't skimp on those. Wound up buying one probably 7 or 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and I'm like, wow, this thing's only like $150. So yeah, I got it home, and you have to like hug it to get warm. Like it doesn't really, the heat doesn't radiate the way it should. Now if you go mm-hmm. to a place like, you know, one of the ones that comes to mind first is the Delaney House. They have them outside on that patio.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's awesome.
They're
it's,
nice.
It's like you don't feel like you're even outdoors because you're so warm.
I was at 350 the other night sitting outside, and they've got, it's like the ductwork over the outdoor area. And the whole thing, the whole area of duct is all heating. It's all emanating heat from it. So
but you also
you sat under there, you were warm.
But don't they also have, and I don't know if it's like tented walls, but you're kind of separated from the actual outdoors. There's a brick wall, and I think they can also do like tenting around those open areas.
It's like you're sitting in a brick oven.
Oh, like a brick oven pizza.
Yeah, you're a brick oven customer.
You can't have people just sitting there under a brick oven.
It's all supervised.
Yep.
A Norwood real estate company purchased the closed Friendly's property near Forest Park at the end of September for $600,000, and the boarded-up restaurant is now advertised for lease. And finally, the fishamajig order is up from the last customer that was in there. Yeah, I'll order a fishamajig.
Sitting there for a little while.
And then the guy's just sitting there, and then they close the restaurant right in the middle of waiting for his order. But now that it's been purchased, ding!
You know, I'm trying to figure out more than one. The former Friendly's in Enfield became a bar restaurant, of which there's another one on Riverdale in West Springfield. I can't remember the name of it. It didn't last very long, it became the Commonwealth.
Was it the Piccadilly Pub?
Well, it was the Piccadilly Pub a while ago, but then it became something. No, I'm talking about the restaurant, the former Friendly's in Enfield became this other thing.
Right.
And a second location was in West Springfield. But the Piccadilly Pub always only had one location. What it was.
Piccadilly Pub had two locations. There was one out in, I believe, Charlton or...
Oh, okay. Well, area.
I know what you're saying, I'm kind of blanking because it was a... There was another place.
Yeah.
But I remember going there like once and saying, okay, well, there you go. And at least the food arrived in a quick fashion, and I was able to get the bill within 2 or 3 hours, which I thought was a major step up from Friendly's.
But what I'm saying is it looks like anybody who tries to turn a Friendly's into something else, it doesn't work. Because it didn't work in Enfield. And although the other Friendly's that was in Enfield, I can't think of what it is right now. It's on Elm Street.
But do you think that's because of the building reminds people of what it was versus what it is now?
What I mean. You have to change. The one on Route 5 in Enfield changed its look. It didn't look like, this used to be a Friendly. You could tell this was a Friendly's just by pulling up in front of the place. No, you couldn't. They changed the outer shell to make it look different.
That's what it was. Backyard barbecue.
Yes.
That's what it was.
Backyard grill.
There's a sushi place in Westfield that's been popular for years now, and that used to be an IHOP, and you can definitely tell.
Is that the Z's?
K's.
The K's. I know it was some letter.
I believe that was the IHOP, because it's got that pitched roof like the IHOP has. So I don't know if it necessarily... it's because of the shape of the building or the place that it reminds you of.
Yeah, I don't think it does either. I think that you know, just restaurant business in general is very, very difficult to sustain. You either get it right and you get a good clientele, or you struggle. And I think,
yeah, but it can also depend on the, like, wasn't that an IHOP on Sumner Avenue that's now a Chinese restaurant?
I don't even know if that's still open.
Yeah.
You're right.
Once again, I'm the guy who's talking about 20-year-old restaurants.
Oh, let's play the where stuff was.
Yeah. I still don't understand why that building on Boston Road, the old Smoky Bones, remains closed. I still don't understand.
Remains untouched.
Yeah. Ever since Smoky Bones went away, and what is that's at least 10 years, if not
more.
It's got to
be 15 years.
Probably, yeah. I'm surprised, because it's a nice building. You're on Boston Road. I mean, it's not for a lack of traffic.
I think it's a lousy location. I think it is for a lack of traffic, because you have to go all the way into, you have to go, first of all, if you're driving eastbound, you have to go all the way up to the entrance near the tire place to make a left-hand turn in there. And then you got to backtrack, you know, past Lowe's and the old Stop and Shop or whatever that was.
Right.
To come back there. It's not really a very convenient location.
Somebody just commented, Friendlies are like burial grounds for restaurants.
Oh, my God. That's not very nice.
Not very nice, but very accurate.
I don't know about that either.
The opportunity to appear in a major motion picture cost a Boston news anchor her job. WHDH newscaster Elena Pinto, who recently made an appearance in Adam Sandler's Netflix movie Hubie Halloween, announced Thursday that she was fired after appearing in the film due to a contract violation. In the Twitter thread on Thursday, Pinto wrote, "Hi, friends. I have some news to share. Earlier this week, I was let go from News 7. I am posting this because I want to be open and honest with you."
I'm a dope.
Yeah. "I want to be open and honest with you, unlike I was open and honest with my employer before I signed a contract to get into this movie."
Which, of course, in my contract, provision number 13, section D, index 5, says, "In the case of freelance work, I must notify my employer."
She said she unknowingly did this. I can't imagine you would not read your contract when you signed it.
I would also think that to get a job in Boston television, you have an agent. And the agent would certainly be aware of something like that. And since you're paying an agent for the length of the contract, you would probably say to him, "Hey, listen, I got this offer to be in this Adam Sandler movie. Am I okay to do that?" And the agent would say, "No, there's a provision in your contract that says you got to contact." And the other thing, too, is, was she appearing as a TV anchor using WHDH mics or mic flags or things like that?
It was a fake Boston news station.
Yep,
and she was being a fake report, you know, fake newscast reporter for a
station.
Totally
in violation.
Yeah.
Not everybody in Boston television has an agent. But nevertheless, whether she did or she didn't, if you're being asked to do freelance work in a broadcast job, you ask your employer whether this is okay.
Well,
no matter what.
I mean,
it's such a rookie mistake.
Yeah, it's a total rookie mistake, especially if you're being asked to play a mock version of your actual job.
Yeah.
That's just simple, you know. Why would you not go to your employer and say, "Hey, listen, it's not the kind of thing that happens overnight. That's the kind of thing that probably took months between the time she was notified and the time it actually happened." Yeah, she doesn't sound very bright.
There's a thing in our, well, at least in mine there is. I'm sure it's the same for you guys because they're pretty uniform with some of the stuff that we can be voices and get paid by other people other than this radio station. Voice commercials. You didn't know that?
Oh, really?
Yes, it says it right in the contract. You probably didn't read yours either. Yeah, really.
Really?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, it says you can do that as long as
maybe you got a special deal.
No, it just says as long as it's in a positive light to reflect this company, then it's okay to do that. But I would still ask.
Hey, John, get a load of this guy.
Get a load of this guy.
Right.
Go ahead, voice boy.
No, I'm done.
No, I know, but you got to do news.
Yeah, come on, Don Pardo.
You're the
let's throw some voices around.
Hormel Foods has created a face mask that smells like bacon. They say it's a, quote, revolutionary face mask featuring the latest in pork-scented technology.
That's a little too close to the face and a little too constant.
Well, isn't it better than smelling your own terrible breath inside of
your
face?
And then I was going to say, and then add the combination of the smell of your own breath.
No. You get filtered breath now because you're blowing out and the bacon smell coming right back in your face. You can enter a chance to win one for free at breathablebacon.com. They'll announce the winners on November 4th. It's a very creepy-looking picture, too. They use this, like... mannequin head. What do you call those things?
A mannequin head.
No,
mannequin
I know, heads. But there's a special name for the just the head.
Head of the mannequin.
Whatever. That thing. And it's like it's like this grayish silver looking mean looking thing.
A bust.
A bust. Thank you very much. Thank you, John.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of creepy looking. I wouldn't buy one just from looking at this commercial.
But you haven't smelled it.
No,
it
but
could
you
be
know
the
what?
Smell that lures you in.
It's you know, we've talked about this before. Anything that I've ever gotten that people thought was a cool novelty, like a bacon candle or bacon scented soap,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Does not smell anything like bacon. It smells like it smells like a Bondi's Island trash fire is what it smells like.
Hell, come on. Yeah, in fact, that's what I thought it was yesterday, coming back from the Mohawk Trail, and I'm like, holy cow, can't believe all these people who bought bacon masks.
Look at the bacon candle.
Yeah.
I mean, real bacon smells fantastic, but fake bacon does not smell good at all.
No.
Yeah. It's just a tough thing to recreate.
It is.
Your Pioneer Valley forecast today, going to be crappy and rainy with a high of 66. Tomorrow, crappy and rainy with a high of 59. It's 65 in downtown Springfield. It's about 120 degrees down at Bondi's Island right now, and that's the news on Rock 102. Oh, yeah.
Get back on the road to see your friends and family now. Go to Gary Rum Hyundai with our massive...